You are listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our featured nonprofit or advocacy organization in Grant County and surrounding area. I'm Candace Burke, your weekly host. Today I'll be talking to sheep herder, artist, and environmentalist Jennifer Douglas. She is here to talk about her work with a nonprofit organization, Rio Milagro Foundation. Rio Milagro is, quote, dedicated to studying and advancing the welfare of the land-raised Churro sheep. Welcome to Community Spotlight, Jennifer.
Thanks, Candace.
I have so much enjoyed looking at your website, and it's, we talked about earlier, it's so deep and powerful and fascinating. I could spend an entire day hearing about the Churro sheep. So before you tell us all about the Churro sheep, just share with our listeners, sharing our listeners with, more about your background, your work, and what led you to this nonprofit. So welcome to Community Spotlight, Jennifer.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's been a long process. We've had the sheep now since 2000, so 24 years. It's a funny story of how it all began, because before we had the sheep, I had no association with sheep at all. And just out of the blue, a lone sheep showed up on our doorstep 24 years ago out Highway 90 by White Signal. And the sheep wouldn't leave us. And to make a long story short, we kept trying to push him over to the ranch next to us, thinking that's where he belonged. But he kept coming back and just hanging out. And he was just this lone ram. And come to find out that he was on the highway for several days. No one could catch him. Livestock agents, sheriffs, no one could catch him. He was seen at one of our friends' ranches 7 miles to the south. And then he was seen across in Red Rock in the boroughs. So
that's amazing.
He was traveling, but he wouldn't leave our house. And what was so funny was, at the time, I was doing these big installation pieces that had to do with felt. And I was getting the felt from a mill up in Magdalena, New Mexico. And I just happened to call the woman that owned the mill, Betty Mill was her name. And she said, well, I raise sheep, and just come get a couple of girls for him. That's all you need to do. And
wow.
Just out of the blue, that's what we did. And they were churros. And I had no idea at the time what type of churros they were. But it just snowballed after that. And now, presently, we have some of the last of the actual primitive genetics of the Churro sheep. And Churros have been in the Southwest, in New Mexico mainly, and Chihuahua, Oaxaca, and Arizona for 600 years.
And a long
they
time.
They are totally integral to, to the survival of just the people before, before we had access to modern, transportation and everything. The Churros were the only livestock that could survive the Camino de Real Trail, just in the Southwest. And so they've been really important culturally.
It was fascinating about the sheep is just that they are really designed for living in drought climates we have, drought-filled, that they can travel for long distances without water or food.
Yes. And that's something early on when I spent about 4 years working with Dr. Lyle McNeil, who in the 1970s, he actually saved the last of the Churros on the Navajo Reservation from being destroyed. And that's a long story in itself, something that can be told, or you can go to to the website and you can see it, but told at a different time. But just the sheep in general, just everything about them is perfect for extreme conditions. And in our you know, situation we're in right now with climate change, they literally can mitigate climate change on many different levels. And that's something that we're really advocating with the foundation.
That's what's so fascinating is they're good for our environment. And they have these little hooves that barely touch the soil. I mean, everything about them, their fleece, everything is fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. You know, that's the thing is the smallness of them. They, you know, that was the point of the foundation, was literally the last ditch effort to save the last of these land races, because the push for the last 150 years is to modernize the sheep. And this is with land races or adapted species. That's what a land race is an adapted species for a specific area environment. And that adapted species needs to live in that area for centuries to become a land race. But these adapted species or land races throughout the world are, you know, being, you know, destroyed because of commercialization, because we want something bigger and better. And with the Truro in itself, this has been the problem for the last 120 years, is modernizing or improving this sheep to be bigger for bigger meat carcasses, you know, for the commercial market there, as well as a softer fleece for people that knit and people that, you know, design clothes and everything. But in reality, what has been going on in these 150 years is the realization that you can't improve the sheep. This sheep already is improved with this small little body that can move so perfectly in these desert environments for miles and miles. And this incredible three-fiber fleece that is different than any sheep in the world. And it is perfect for what we're doing right now.
It sounds absolutely perfect. These sheep are fascinating, and you said they're very intelligent, affectionate. Tell us more about what you were sharing with me before the interview, how they are, their personalities.
Yeah, they are. So there's all of these factors. So we've got their body type, their phenotype. They've got these very long legs that are very fine bone, but their bone is fine. But what's so fascinating is that it has the dense structure of the ungulates out there, like deer and antelope. So they're very strong and they're very narrow bodied. So they don't really hold fat in their muscle. They hold it around their organs. So their meat, when you do butcher them, is it far surpasses anything else, just with omega-3s and all of the things that are really important. And then in that, you know, in that phenotype, in that physicality, you also have their intelligence, which you just mentioned, Candace, and that is so fascinating about them. Scientists in the last 10 years have done studies on sheep in general and have realized just their intelligence. They've said that they're you know, rival, you know, dolphins and whales and even chimps with the intelligence. But what is so interesting about the Truro, and especially the landrace Truro, is that they haven't been inbred. They still have their wild instincts. Therefore, they are more intelligent than most other sheep breeds. So we see that in our flock, and we see it on a daily basis. And one of the ways that we see it in our flock is just the relationships they have as a community. For instance, because we're holding most of the genetics for the primitive Truro right now, we have about 140 sheep in our flock. So we have different family groups. And in those family groups, you have the great-grandmas, the grandmas, you have the ewes, then you have the, we also hold the genetics for the rams, so we do have a large ram group. And so you've got the young rams that are part of those family groups. And even though the rams are not living with the U groups, they're separate because we're keeping our genetics separate.
Sure.
You'll see the different groups laying next to each other, like, you know, across the fence in the evening, you know. And it's and not just that, but watching their interactions on births and how the U's will assist the young U's on their first births, the
I
older
love that.
U's. So it's very important for us. I learned this early from some old Navajo elders, the shepherds, which is so different than the commercial idea of sheep, is that we've got, you know, you've got to slaughter them at 6 years old. Well, we have a whole group of 16, 17-year-old ewes, and that's what's interesting about the land race genetics also, is the longevity, that they're still viable, they're still breeding, they're still active, they still can go out with the flock for miles at 16, 17, 18 years old.
That's incredible.
And it's those older sheep, and this is again in the intelligence, that show the younger sheep what to eat when we're out on the rangeland. They assist in the births.
They're midwives. I love that.
They really are. I know it sounds weird, but just being with this flock as a shepherd, and that's what I am, is I'm not a sheep owner. I'm a shepherd for as long as I have. And interacting with so many of the elders, because it is so intercultural in the Southwest. So the Navajo culture, the Hopi culture, Zuni culture, Hispanic culture, and then down in Mexico, the Tarahumara, you know, they all are still viable with the sheep. And we're trying to keep that viability because we're losing it so quick. And
yes.
So that's part of the foundation right now is, and we have recently developed a women's group, an intercultural women's group. Actually, it's internationally cultural.
You mentioned it's international now.
Yes, it is. And so, and the neat thing is trying to get a younger generation involved. And so many of our members that are coming in are young, indigenous, like 20 and 30 year olds, indigenous. A lot of them are in colleges around the country in biology and conservation degrees. They all want to be able to save their culture through the churros with mitigation of climate with the sheep. It is just remarkable.
This is totally remarkable. And tell us more, you know, about Rio Milagro, how what you're doing right now as we speak and some future projects that you're focusing on.
Yes, of course. So it's, you know, when we talk about the sheep and talk about what Rio Milagro Foundation is doing, it's always complex. And the reason why it's complex is because we are changing the paradigm of the thought process of how a little lowly land-raised sheep that lives in New Mexico and has been part of New Mexico can be a climate hero, literally.
And this is, we're talking a super climate hero here.
Yeah. So, you know, you think about sheep and you think about how they've been with humans from the very beginning of our existence, correct?
Yeah.
And so they have assisted us with our wool, with our meat, with, you know, just everything, right? You know, and so with that thought process, that was the thought process we had with the idea of how can these sheep help us? Well, in the process of living with them and living in the Southwest and being part of this community for as long as we have seen how our climate I think we're on the forefront right now of climate change down here, and we're seeing the effects so drastically.
Yes.
About 7 or 8 years ago, at our place in Mimbrus, we have a farm, you know, that's where we're moving, and we have our farm in Mimbrus. We were seeing just a lot of the big junipers, the old century-old junipers, just getting shocked and dying. And so we ended up, out of desperation, throwing a couple of the fleeces down to be able to protect the trees. And they did. And that was the crazy thing was it stopped these trees from dying. But then we also started realizing how this wool had something special about it where it held moisture for several months, way longer than any other type of mulch you could possibly use. But then the most important thing was how it really jump-started the mycelium in this degraded rangeland soil. And so we started realizing that there was something really special about the wool with a hotter and drier climate and climate change. And so we started really starting to think about how we could use the wool for mitigation of soil. And this was 7-8 years ago, before it was popular. But now it's popular.
Yeah,
and now what's really great is the timing of the foundation and trying to save the last of the churro from extinction, the real land race, and knowing they can mitigate climate change. So besides the wool, for the last 15, 20 years of just going out with them. So we shepherd our sheep. We don't just put them in a pasture and leave them. So we go out with them, and we're out on rangeland, and watching the way that they move through the environment, the way they interacted with the environment, but then also what they ate in the environment intrigued me, because it was completely different than any other livestock I've
ever known.
This
is fascinating, what you're about to share.
Yeah, so So I started documenting it, and I realized that they were eating plants that were highly toxic or toxic to other livestock, and they ate them readily. And I started realizing that the toxins in those plants were probably reacting to what was their biome in their guts, and you know, doing this interesting stuff. But then another thing that I realized, too, was that my flock of 100 ewes, 120 ewes, it depends on the year or how many we have, could go through areas and hardly disturb the soil. Now, what's important on this is the fact that, and new studies are happening all the time on this, and I'm so happy that this is happening, but the soil in the Southwest consists mostly of what's called biocrust. And biocrust is incredibly fragile. So biocrust is in the upper, say, 10 centimeters of soil, and it consists of, you know, microbes and, you know, fungus and all of this stuff that keeps the soil from degrading. Right. It assists the plants that you know, surround it, the grass, the trees, and everything. It has a, you know, they're realizing it has like a sunscreen that protects it. It can hold moisture. You know, it does all this stuff, but it is incredibly fragile. So large-hoofed, slower livestock animals, and this also includes different sheep breeds, can instantly damage biocrust. And they also have found that once it's damaged, it takes about 10 to 12 years for it to come back.
And that's pretty rampant because of all the large-hoofed animals that
Absolutely.
Are being farmed.
Yes. And so with that, the desertification is happening so quickly because we are drying out so quickly. So with that said, here's this little sheep that has been, everyone is trying to modernize to make them bigger and bigger hooved and slower and nothing like this incredible little sheep that can actually assist the soil instead of destroy the soil just in the way it grazes. And then another thing about them, which is really interesting when we're going out, is that they don't just eat grass. As a matter of fact, they leave a lot of the range grass alone for all of the other plants that are medicinal to us and medicinal to them, but they also browse. So they're a lot like a goat that way, but not as destructive as a goat.
Goats can be very destructive.
Yes. And so the way I say it, you know, going out with them is that they snatch and grab. So we are, when we go out with the sheep and we're shepherding the sheep, we are traveling sometimes 2 and 3 miles, 4 miles in an hour, hour and a half. And they're just snatching and grabbing. They're running to the older sheep, of course, the older ewes, again.
Yeah.
They are taking the younger ones, teaching them where certain plants are at different times of the year.
That's amazing.
And it's intergenerational, so you become part of that, and you're with them in there. And what's so amazing about it is that if they don't have, if they're not, they don't have their new lambs, but if they're, you know, is that they're totally silent when they're traveling.
They are.
So all you hear is them moving through the grass and the plants, and just you can hear them biting things off. And it's an incredible sound.
Wow, that sounds incredible.
I recorded it a lot, as a matter of fact, because I'm really fascinated with it.
That's amazing.
I know.
They're fascinating to me. Now, our listeners are probably going to be interested in how they can make contact with you and learn more, you know, about you know, the Churro Sheep and your organization. So what can you share about
that? So we have a website, and our website is www.riomilagro.org. And that is a really good way of just kind of getting an idea about the sheep. But another thing is because we're a nonprofit organization, we're here in Silver City, if anybody that's listening right now wants to volunteer, please come and volunteer, because we need assistance. We need assistance with lots of different things.
Yeah.
Because we're doing the work, and we're working hard, and, you know, just fundraising.
Yeah, that where there's a wool, there's a way.
That's a good one. Grant writing.
Yeah,
we're
grant
do
writing.
Grants, fundraising.
There's a lot you could use help with.
Yeah, donating.
Donating.
We are, you know, our main goals for this and for the foundation and where your money will go is protecting the sheep mainly. And it's protecting our flocks. As well as assisting other shepherds, because right now because of the conditions, you know, in the Southwest and the drought, is that we're losing the other flocks that are out there. We're finding the flocks that are hidden right now. And then we want to support them. So that's another way that your money will be used, is assisting these other shepherds. We've started a initiative too called True Churro, and that is an initiative where we are locating and these flocks will be part of this initiative, and that's how we know that they are. You know, they are, you know, the primitive land race. And then, of course, the Women's Collaborative that is becoming part of this.
This is all fascinating. And listeners, you really have to look at the website. I've never seen a website so fascinating. It is just incredible.
Thank you. It's a labor of love.
I can see that's
what this is a total labor of love for trying to make a difference with the environment, but then also understanding the capacity that these animals have and that we're getting ready to lose them. And this is something I do need to say in this too, is that the reason why we're losing these genetics is because the pressure from our commercial idea of how we should have these sheep. So many of the churros that are out there right now are what's called the modern sheep. And so they're twice the size. They have completely the wrong fleece. They don't have the mothering instincts. They don't have the parasite resistance. They don't have any of that. And there's about 3,000 to 4,000 registered of these type of sheep in the Churro Association right now. So our foundation is giving that alternative. It's just an alternative. It totally supports the association and these modern churros. But at the same time, we've got to have a place so that we can have these genetics, right?
Absolutely.
Save these genetics.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're doing.
As we're wrapping up our interview, what else would you like for our listeners to understand about the Churro Sheep and your mission right now? What is it that you really want them to really ponder over and just, you know, integrate into their own lifestyles?
Well, two things, I think. One of them is the fact that this little lowly sheep that people look at and they just go, what is that, can have these incredible answers to help us survive in the next 20, 30 years. But then also what I want people to understand is that here is this animal that is so intercultural and is tying the entire cultures of the Southwest and Mexico together. This little lowly sheep.
Yes.
And that even in all these cultures, there's been a push to get rid of them. But now our organization is having a place for the sheep in a different paradigm altogether as Climate Hero that is bringing all of these cultures back together. So the ancestors, the elders, and the younger generation is becoming part of this.
Well, Jennifer, I am so grateful that you are doing this. I'll have you come back. I have to listen. I mean, I want to hear more and more about this. I'm just fascinated. You're doing this an incredible work. Besides being this amazing artist, you know, your environmentalism, especially in this area of preserving the Churro sheep, you know, is really inspiring.
Thanks, Candace. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on.
I'm really glad you're here. And listeners, I'm having an hour-long community spotlight. I have another guest coming in, but I just want to thank you again, Jennifer, for being here.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
So we'll be in touch with you because we have to learn a lot more about this.
Okay. Great. I'm glad. I'm here to share.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. So, listeners, our next guest is Damie Nelson with PFLAG. So I think. We're going to take a very small break so we can bring Damie on board.